Today's talk will annoy many listeners. They will be incandescent, and combined could provide the energy to run a major city. Last year, Terry Krieg from South Australia told why he supports nuclear power. He was applauded by some listeners, and others suggested he be buried along with the nuclear waste he says is harmless. Well, this time he tackles myths, as he calls them, many of them. Terry.
First, some background. I converted from an anti to pro-nuclear in 1981 during a year on teacher exchange in Toronto, Canada, where I had to confront nuclear power head-on. My family, six of us, depended on nuclear power. I visited the Pickering Nuclear Power Station in Toronto, stood in front of an open reactor ready for recharge, inspected the spent fuel cooling ponds, walked across the top of an operating reactor at the Chalk River Nuclear Research Station, went underground in two uranium mines, and got a sample bag of yellow cake. I still have it. Following that, I returned to Australia a pro-nuke. I'm not a scientist, know little about nuclear physics, chemistry and engineering, but since 1998, through almost continuous study, have developed a good understanding of the nuclear power generating industry. Following are facts which overturn some of the myths about nuclear power. Myth 1. There is no safe level of exposure to nuclear radiation. This assertion is really quite silly. We are all subjected to radiation continuously from our surroundings, our buildings, our food, and each other. It's called background radiation and varies from place to place. There is above average background radiation where I live in Port Lincoln because there are six uranium prospects in the surrounding hills. Our hospital's built on one of them. Ramsar in Iran has background radiation levels 50 times average. And people have adapted to these levels with no health impairment. Studies in the US, Canada, Taiwan and Lucas Heights in Australia have shown that low-level radiation stimulates the immune system and effects DNA repair. The Lucas Heights study showed that workers there had a lower incidence of cancer and cardiovascular disease than the general New South Wales population. Many of us have benefited from the medical uses of radioactive materials. As Professor Paul Davies noted in 1998, and I quote, "The dangers of radiation have always been ludicrously exaggerated." Myth 2. Nuclear power reactors emit dangerous amounts of radioactive materials. Well, in fact, they emit very little radioactive materials during normal operation because most of it's confined to the fuel assemblies. All power plant radioactive releases are regulated by nuclear safety agencies. The gaseous releases are thoroughly regulated and extensively documented. The United Nations Scientific Committee on the Effects of Atomic Radiation report of 2000 says emissions from nuclear operations give an average person radiation dose of 0.2 microsieverts per year. Average background dose is 2.4 millisieverts per year. It's more dangerous living near a coal power station than a nuclear one. The coal power station emits much more radiation than a nuclear one. Listeners may be surprised to know that annual waste from a 1 gigawatt coal power plant includes 2.5 million tonnes of solid waste, 3 million tonnes of CO2, and enough uranium to power a fast breeder reactor for a year. A 1 gigawatt nuclear power plant creates about 20 tonnes of solid waste and no CO2. Myth 3. Nuclear power is the most expensive form of electricity generation. Wrong. For over 50 years, the cost of nuclear electricity to the consumer has steadily dropped. It's now the cheapest power in the world, except in markets where there is direct access to low-cost fossil fuels. This is mainly because, weight for weight, nuclear fuels have 20,000 times the energy content of fossil fuels. In OECD countries, nuclear fuel is typically around one-third the cost of coal fuel and one-fifth of gas fuel. In most countries, nuclear power is very competitive with other options for baseload electricity, with a great added advantage of producing no greenhouse gases or pollution during operation. Myth 4. No nuclear reactors have been safely decommissioned, and who pays the bill? Not true. To date, Over 70 nuclear reactors, research reactors and some fuel cycle facilities have been retired. Many of them have been completely dismantled and their sites restored to greenfield status with no restriction on subsequent land use. Decommissioning costs have fallen to about 2% of the total cost of electricity generation and are fully included in the tariffs paid by the consumer. Nuclear power production is the only industry on the planet that takes full financial and physical responsibility for the disposal and clean-up of all of its operating and decommissioning wastes. Myth 5. There is no safe way to dispose of nuclear waste. Not true, and that statement begs the question, what's happened to the 450,000 tonnes of high-level waste on the surface of the Earth? Well, on exit from the reactor, the fuel rods spend 3 years in cooling ponds attached to power stations. After that, and when cool enough, they are held in above-ground cool air storage for about 30 years. They are then ready for burial in suitable sites. The waste is handled on a daily basis by dozens of workers, and no worker has died as a result. Nuclear waste has been handled safely and securely for decades, has been transported across cities, the countryside and the oceans, with never an accident which leaked nuclear materials into the environment. Volumes of high-level waste are tiny compared with volumes of other waste we handle and will in the future reduce even further as integrated fast reactors come on stream. These reactors effect a near 100% burn of the nuclear fuel, thereby reducing the waste to very low volumes. Myth 6. The number of deaths from the Chernobyl accident will total in the tens of thousands. In a 2007 letter to me, the South Australian Energy Minister, Mr. Pat Conlon, wrote that 25,000 Russian soldiers died from radiation during the clean-up. That assertion, like many others made, is totally groundless and ridiculous. Reading from the UNSCEAR report of 2000 to the UN General Assembly, the Chernobyl incident caused A. direct deaths of 30 plant operators, B. high radiation doses to 600 emergency personnel, with 134 experiencing acute radiation sickness, 100 of whom had ongoing health impairment, C. an increased risk of non-fatal thyroid cancer, especially in those who were children at the time. No evidence of other major impacts on public health caused by exposure to ionising radiation. E. No other increase in overall cancer incidence or mortality that could be associated with radiation exposure, and no increased risk of leukaemia. F. No increase in the incidence of birth defects. Thus, the total death toll from radiation is about 40. Myth 7. Plutonium is the most toxic substance known. No, it isn't. As far as radioactive elements go, plutonium-239 is not even in the top 10. Isotopes of radium are 100 times more toxic. Actinium-227 is 16 times as toxic. Thorium-232 is more toxic, and it's found in beach sands. All lead-210 compounds are twice as toxic. And talking of toxic chemical elements, plutonium is hardly in the running. In the Handbook of Toxicology of Metals, it doesn't rate a mention, except in passing with the entry for uranium. In 1975, Ralph Nader made the absurd claim that 1 pound of plutonium is enough to induce lung cancer in every person on Earth. An American health physics expert, Professor Bernard Cohen, called the claim fictional nonsense and challenged Nader that he, Cohen, would eat as much plutonium as Nader would eat pure caffeine. After 35 years, Nader has still not taken up the challenge. An acquaintance of mine handled plutonium on a daily basis for 3 years with just gloves separating his hands and the plutonium. He has suffered no ill effects. Myth 8. Terrorist groups will make nuclear bombs from stolen nuclear materials. Well, this threat was summarily dismissed by Mr. Justice Parker, who conducted the Windscale inquiry in Great Britain in 1978. In his report, He noted that, and I quote, although plutonium has been produced and moved both intrastate and internationally for more than 25 years, there has never been any terrorist threat. And there's been no threat in the 30 years since the Parker Report. Using non-weapons-grade plutonium from a civil nuclear electricity reactor would be useless for construction of any nuclear explosive device. A far easier option, and one to be much more feared, would be the theft of an existing nuclear weapon. The Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, as administered by the International Atomic Energy Agency and most countries in the nuclear business, including Australia, ensures that no diversions to weapons production are made. The fact remains, no nuclear weapons country uses plutonium from commercial power reactors. And being party to the Non-Proliferation Treaty, they have agreed not to do so. Myth 9. Nuclear power stations are not covered by insurance. Yes, they are. Nuclear power plant operators are liable for any damage caused regardless of fault. They are required to take out third-party liability. Cross-boundary consequences of a nuclear accident are covered by a national and international liability regime. Liability is limited by national and international conventions, and so the state can accept responsibility as insurer of last resort. The Japanese government have set up a state-based scheme for Fukushima victims. And in 2006, a broker who was responsible for a nuclear insurance pool said, and I quote, "It is wrong that insurers will not touch nuclear power stations. In fact, wherever they are available to private sector insurers, Western-designed nuclear installations are sought-after business because of their high engineering and risk management standards." Myth 10. Nuclear energy is not the answer to global warming. If greenhouse gases are the cause, then nuclear power generation, emitting no greenhouse gases, will play a major role in coping with the problem. Many leading world environmentalists are calling for more nuclear power as the only realistic alternative to fossil fuel. These include James Lovelock, Bishop Hugh Montefiore, a former anti-nuke who was sacked from the Friends of the Earth board because he advocates nuclear power, and Patrick Moore, a founder of Greenpeace, who has said, and I quote, "Nuclear energy is the only non-greenhouse-emitting power source that can effectively replace fossil fuels and satisfy global demand." And so, in my view, every aspect of nuclear power generation has been demonised by the anti-nuclear ideologues who will never be persuaded by fact or reason. They don't bother with research, have a complete disregard for logic, and are generally unwilling to engage in civil discussion. Their actions have effectively delayed the growth of nuclear power and ensured greater world use of fossil fuels, especially coal. Unwittingly, they have contributed more than anyone to the greenhouse problem the world now faces. They have been wrong-headed in their opposition to nuclear power, should hang their collective heads in shame and apologise to the world, as indeed a couple of them have recently done.
Terry Krieg in Port Lincoln. And if you want to look up both sides of the argument, you can go to a book called Yes and No, in which Barry Brook, for, and Ian Lowe, against, summarise the arguments about nuclear power. Next week, Professor Mark Dodson in Brisbane discusses the malign influence of Robert Strange McNamara. I'm Robin Williams.